If you think that's the first time I got cut off by an Al-Anon. I got one that cut me off all the time. I love you, Toronto. My name's Marty. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Moorhead Thursday night group. We meet Sunday morning. What a fellowship. I'm so overjoyed to be here, and I want to thank Al-Anon for screwing up and getting me back here. That guy was an incredibly good speaker. I was sorry he stopped talking because I knew what I had to say. I'd heard me before. He was excellent. And Toronto's conference is excellent. I compliment you. I've been one of those people that has been blessed with the ability to, well, Tommy B used to call them windbags, but I've just been so blessed to go all over and talk. And I say this right from the bottom of my heart, that to get to a conference of this size and see this much enthusiasm, God within, very difficult. So, you know, you should give yourselves a round of applause. It's a marvelous conference. You're also a good-looking bunch. None of you burped up on yourselves over supper. That might not impress the people who aren't alcoholics. That's a big deal to us. You know, sitting at supper and kind of, whoa. Sorry. Oh, now she's mad again. Honestly. Flies off the handle at nothing. I want to warn you, if you're new to the program, that I do not represent Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, I'm only going to be speaking about myself, so I can tell you that everything I say is absolutely correct. Your sponsor might not agree with the way I deliver it. They have the right to be wrong. Listening to me for some is a growing experience in tolerance. But I would just hope tonight that I could share the experience, the strength, and most of all, the hope that you lunatics have given me. Because it's in rooms like this and from people like you that I have learned to become tough enough to not have to drink anymore. And that is just a miracle that just keeps on happening. And I had my last drink of alcohol on February the 8th of 1976. And I always like to repeat something somebody said. I don't even know who, but they said, you know, if I'd have known that was going to be my last drink, I'd have had something fancy. I didn't mean to quit. I did it. And therefore, I'm not going to spend a lot of time tonight talking about drinking. In a room like this, some of you know something about drinking. Some of you know about sitting waiting for somebody drinking to get home, praying, dear God, please get my alcoholic home safely so that I can strangle that son of a bitch, right? We're a confused lot by and large, and I want to welcome the director of alcohol research. You've chosen a confusing field. We'll lie to you, frankly. We'll want to tell the truth, but it doesn't sound bad enough. So did you have that when you got here? You know, you thought, I'm not as bad as these people. Within 2 months, you're saying, I'm worse than anyone here. Within 2 years, you're saying, that's it. I'm here. I'm only going to talk about two drinks, because I only had two drinks that really matter, and that was my first drink and my last drink. I hope it was my last drink. My first drink happened in the bathroom. I was drinking wine. Some of you finished up on wine. I started on wine right away. It's great stuff, Burgundy, Loganberry wine, which is great stuff, goes down a deep purple and comes up kind of a phony pink. You know. And
Some things happened to me the first time I drank. It was awful. It was hot in that bathroom. I had this little friend. We'd been the closest of friends for years. And he took a drink and he spit it in the toilet. And I thought, well, we won't be hanging around with him anymore, will we? You know? You have to drink with lower companionship, they say, to be alcoholic. But in order to become a lower companion, takes some time. And so, I mean, I was 11 years old. I'd held off as long as I could. I needed a drink in grade one, but I couldn't find any. We're in this bathroom, and he spit his... I took a shot of that stuff, and I had a miracle. It was like one of those TV evangelists. I was healed. My nose fit. Everything fit. And I got on my bicycle and went to the back of a truck. I was all skinned up. I got home. My mother ripped my clothes off me. My mother was shocked. You've got to understand that I came from a Christian home. Excellent breeding ground for alcoholism. And, she didn't know what to do. She was somewhere between laughing and being really upset. I remember. I was horrendously drunk. I was looking for my brother. I was going to beat him up. I was mad right away. She threw me in the bathtub, and then, of course, the change in heat, I puked. Now we've got the pink foam on the top of the water. Should have been a humiliating experience. My sisters and my brothers were brought through there. Look at that. That's what happens to you when you drink. And my brother's thinking, yeah. You know, I got up in the morning, and I mean, I had those racing memories. You know what you get in the morning? I blacked out. But I had the bits and the pieces of the night before, and I thought, yes! The next time I get near that stuff, I'm going to get drunker. See? People say to me, how do you know you're an alcoholic? If you puke, run into the back of a truck and get up and say, yes, you're an alcoholic. That should deter you from ever drinking again. I thought I'd had a good time. I went to grade 6 looking for social drinkers. And noticed, quite coincidentally, that the girls had no boobs in grade 6. Now, I don't know whether that's a growing experience you go through, but I had come of age. You know, drinking made me feel like you guys appeared to look. I just, you know, and my grades, I mean, I got my report cards a year or so ago. It's amazing. I was an A student right till grade 6. And then they started writing things. Marty has an authority problem. Yeah, I did. I wasn't the authority. I didn't like it. And I mean, I was paranoid, I was alcoholic. I remember the teacher talking in health class one time about these young people that don't mow their lawn. They let their father mow their lawn. Well, I mean, I knew she was talking about me. So I put my hand up and I said, how would you know a thing like that? And she said, well, people talk. I said, that's gossip. That was my first trip out of grade 6. I had many of them after that. You know, I was going to tell a little story on Bob. He's telling gross, obnoxious story, so I thought maybe I'd tell about the time he got captured by the cannibals and tied up, and it was just horrendous. They had about a three-day tribal dance, and they kept sticking a knife in his side and drinking his blood. Just awful. And finally Bob said, like, what's the deal with the stick and the knife in my side? And, well, they said that's part of the ritual. And he said, look, I know you're going to kill me, and I know you're going to eat me, but I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not getting stuck for the drink. Yeah, that's why I drink. Yeah. My drinking from the time I was in grade 6 became a compulsive sort of an action. It seemed like I had just an anger, you know. And I was afraid when I was sober, but when I drank, alcohol would turn my fear into aggression. And I can't, you know, if you're Al-Anon, you may live to be 100 years old and never understand that. But the fact of the matter is, drinking does a lot more for me than relax me or make me feel convivial. Like, I'm just as likely to get up and slap you right across the chops when I'm drinking as not, which was a spiritual experience for a lot of my friends. I saw people's eyebrows and their hairline meet on many occasions because I was unpredictable. The drinking by the time I was in high school was completely unexplainable to me. I seemed to have a huge capacity sometimes, and then at other times I couldn't drink at all. I'd have one or two beers, and I'd be a babbling idiot. And that used to humiliate me, because I thought drinking was a big part of being somebody. Let's get drunk and be somebody. By the time I left high school, and my father made me a deal I couldn't refuse. He said, "Get out." Yeah, it's a sad story, but he actually didn't. He just took me to the door and pointed, but I went into radio, 16 years old. I'd heard that radio had the highest alcoholism rate and the highest divorce rate of any industry in Canada. And I thought, well, it's obvious the place I'd function well. And I did, and I had an alcoholic, a real nut. This guy had been a drunk, apparently, and had stopped drinking. And I thought, why don't they just shoot the poor bugger? You know, can't drink. Steady Eddie. Maybe some of you remember him. He's about a year... Well, I think he sobered up about the year the Earth's crust was starting to cool, but... I had a lot of trouble in radio. I couldn't seem to get to work. I made $225 a week. I remember that. All the records I could eat. And I didn't have any food because I didn't cook. Craft dinner only goes so far, you know. And I drank. And some real tragic things started to happen to me. And if you're in this room tonight, and maybe you're 14, you're 15, you're 11, I don't know what you are, but I want you to know that alcoholism has absolutely no respect for your youth. It had none for me. Because alcoholism, much like diabetes and many other ailments, progresses in different bodies at different speeds. And so when I was 16 years old, I was out drinking compulsively against my own will many times, and I was with a young man who picked up a revolver one night, and we blew his head off, you know. I think that was the first reality of my alcoholism. I started to realize that this thing was perhaps scary, because then there was the car accident. And there was horrendous violence and anger. And now I'm 18 and I'm back at home. I'm going to go back to high school. And I finish high school and I abstain from alcohol for about 6 months in order to do that. I guess one of the mysteries of my life is that during this period of alcoholism, nobody said to me anything about my drinking. They kind of thought I was deviant, misdirected, mixed up. I was even called artistic once. Yeah, my mom. But anyway, I think she said artistic. It's something with arts in it anyway. I went to university, and I had trouble in university. I was going to be a teacher. I was going to show those guys how to teach deviants. And I had trouble getting to class. I took alcoholism 103. I just couldn't seem to get to class. And I had to leave that, and I went back into radio. And I mean, this time, it was bizarre. I threw one of the TV announcers through a bank window one night, and we got arrested. They do that when you're throwing people through bank windows. Narrow. And it got worse. During this period, I was completely confused. I can tell you in all sincerity that my drinking was the only way I hung on. You know, I hear people get up here and they talk about drinking killing them, and I know it does at the end. Don't let me think. Let me make you think I take that lightly, but the fact of the matter is, it's the only escape hatch I had. I had no understanding. And I hung on and I drank, and I used to get up in the morning after my shift, and I would go to Skid Row, and I would get the rubbies off the floor, and I'd buy a gallon of wine, and by noon I looked just like them. And we'd go down to the brewery, and we'd get in the lineup for free beer. And these guys used to say, "What are you doing here?" And I used to say, "I'm trying to see what I look like when I grow up." You know. But I knew where I was going. I had a sense of destiny. And then I married a girl, and she got herself pregnant. That's true. I vaguely remember the thing. We're floating around doing something or other, and I knew she was pregnant because she threw up a lot. And I was very angry. Because the thing that you lose when you're drinking, folks, is nothing to do with money. The thing that you lose when you're drinking is hope. See? The thing that drives people to Alcoholics Anonymous is the madness and the blackness. not because they lost their car or their driver's license or their wife or their family, because we are so arrogant we think we can just replace those things. But when you get to a place where you have no hope, there is no jumping off point. And so when she announced that she was with child, I said, what would you do that for? She said, I didn't do it. I had become fairly well known in British Columbia, where I was a radio announcer at that time. I was on television. And I knew people knew me because I used to walk down the street and they would start laughing. And the reason that they would laugh was because on the 11 o'clock news one night, drunk, I took a fire extinguisher in and hosed down the 11 o'clock anchorman. And then he said to me, has your life become unmanageable? No, not really. I mean, I wouldn't have hosed down the 11 o'clock anchorman, but I was sleeping on the roof of the radio station. Which, at the time, made sense. But you see, we do those things. They're tragically funny, it says in the big book. Tragically funny. I lost everything near and dear to me, and we came home. We had to sell the car. We came home, and I've got a wife. I mean, we're kids, really. She's pregnant. We've got no food. And baffling is not the word. Because I tell her that if she ever tells her mom and dad that we have no food, I'll kill her. This is how alcoholics share with Al-Anon. Sometimes in sobriety. And she lived like a hostage, and I drank. I can't apologize enough for that. I can't tell you how sorry I am for that, because I can't explain that. I would beat somebody like that up. But I couldn't survive any other way. I was so confused and so mixed up, and it seemed like when I was drunk, I was okay, but when I wasn't drunk, I had all these problems. You see, my alcoholism is a thinking problem, complicated with a drinking problem. And if I drink, I think like that, so I can't drink. But my thinking harpooned me. I have a mind that's out to get me. The best I ever heard it said was my friend who's a Marine. He said, when you are deep in your own thought, you are behind enemy lines. Many unfortunate episodes in that house. I remember the night I set the apartment on fire. And I was running up and down the hallway like any citizen would, naked, yelling, fire, fire. And this idiot came out of his apartment and said, you drunk? Shut up. It's you that's on fire. Go to bed. Well, burn that. I mean, hell with it, you know. That's why we move all the time. We burn things. Somebody had wet our bed that night, too. And then, here's why I think alcoholism is a dis-ease. A dis-ease, an uncomfort. You see, if I could have been well enough to have been controlling this thing, I would have done it longer and better. But alcoholism is like diarrhea. You might want to not want to, but when the moment comes, these are the steps we took. You know what I mean? And, I know, potty humor. And some of us don't recover right away. I've got to speed up here. I went into a remission. All I can tell you is one day I was drinking and I had enough. Did you ever have that experience? I never met any other alcoholic in my life who had enough. I mean, they might be out cold on the floor with their false teeth laying beside their head. Can I help you? But I had enough, and I went home and I remember saying to my wife, you know, this drinking thing, I think it's like acting. You know, you have it, you get rid of it, and it's like I'm okay now. And I had 6 months to convince the idiots I worked for and her that I was okay. And we got a little house, and oh, it was really something. 6 glorious months of every once in a while I'd have a beer, and in between it didn't matter. I didn't think about it. I was in a remission. See? Then one day I'm going across the street. Tell me that there's no God. a bus goes by my face, and there's a little boy sitting in bed on the side of this bus, and a bus boy, he's got a catcher's mitt, and it says, a few drinks after work with the boys, what'll it cost? And I think, yeah, that's sad, you know? I got home the following Thursday. No, nothing different, just started to drink, and I was gone. See? And instant remorse. You want to know if you're alcoholic? You know, do you have remorse? I was sorry for World War II. I was born in the 50s. I had remorse about everything. I was sorry. I was sorry, for God's sake. Just, I woke up in the morning. It was a nightmare. So I got drunk. That doesn't make any sense to me now, but I mean, at the time, if you've only got one relief hatch, you use it, you know. And so I got drunk, and I got drunk, and then I got stopped, and I got drunk, and I got stopped, and it's how can you say it's monotonous? I was in a beer parlor one day, and Sweet Daddy Siki, the wrestler, was in there, and I just mentioned to him that I thought he was a fat, obnoxious phony, and he mentioned taking my arms out and beating me to death with them, and then I went into a blackout, and the next thing I know, I'm out in front of a beer parlor on the floor, on the cement. And somebody was telling me not to go back in there. So I thought, oh, screw it, I'll go home. And I got in my car, and now I'm in a car accident, and I'm mad. I had a 59 T-Bird, and it's all smashed up. And I go over to the other car, and I throw the door open. There's nobody in it. It's parked. These things happen to you. You can't have a hit-and-run drunk, so I had a hit-and-stagger, right? I'm gone. And I mean, that didn't end there. I went to the staff party after that and threw a pizza into the president of the company's face because I was mad. And it did not end there. But I woke up in the morning, oh, God, I was sick. Yeah. And tell you, when I start unloading these big chunks of truth, some people... Guy took his whole fifth step and just threw it. And I told God that if you get me out of this, I will never drink again. The alcoholic national anthem. So anyway, to make a long story even longer, I go to work, the president calls me and he lectures me. He tells me I'm a very creative person. Sometimes these things will happen. It'll never happen again. Here, I agree. I was in other trouble. By 5 o'clock, only an alcoholic could have this happen. Everything had cleared up. I was in the clear, and I'm saying to myself, did I tell God I'll never drink again, or did I tell God I won't drink again to excess anymore? See, the missing piece of the puzzle for me as an alcoholic was that I did not know that once I have a drink, I am compelled to drink. It sets up in me a craving that is not in any other class of people. 1 out of 10 have this happen to them. For reasons yet obscure, the book says that once we start to drink, we cannot control our liquor consumption. See? That's why we promised you, Al-Anon, 4,000 times, I'll never do it again. We meant it. But we meant to excess. We were, you know, just going to let the pressure off. And nearly died. So I went over to the bar and I was telling these guys, of course I've got to have a drink, I've got to celebrate, look at all the trouble I'm out of. And I get drunk. And I end up with my wife and my baby. How I did that, I have no idea. I'm in an apartment, there's a man who got me by the throat. And he's telling me, I don't care how much you like the Pointer Sisters, nobody can have the volume that loud at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, well, I'll go home then. That's the way you feel. And I almost killed her and the child on the way home. See, I don't know what else could have brought me to my knees. It was necessary for me to endanger everything at that point, and I had a moment of clarity. Like, I was completely sober. Maybe you've had that experience where you're sober, and I was, and I said to God, I can remember this like it was yesterday. I said, I'm going to die like my buddy Clint. That was the guy that shot his head off. I said, I'm going to go, aren't I? Like, I am one person that is going to die violently, aren't I? And then it was morning and the phone was ringing and I was sick and it was my sister and she called Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know why. I did not relate what was wrong with me to drinking. Drinking was the only thing that made me survive. And yet she'd called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to preface this by telling you that God has a sense of humor. I can prove that to you very quickly. Like, you'll study this as you go on in your vocation, Mark, but if you read an encyclopedia, sorry, Mark, it's just that you're there, that's all. If we get somebody that's fun to be with and they'll take it, we'll just beat the hell out of them. Because we can't drink anymore, and it's not been easy for me, and the bank phones all the time, and yeah. Anyway, if you read an encyclopedia, it would tell you that the financial, one of the big industrialists in America got together with a leader in the medical society in America and forged between them the basis of a worldwide fellowship, which is by far the most successful in the treatises of alcoholism. What really went on there is that a bankrupt stockbroker lawyer named Bill met a drunk doctor by the name of Dr. Bob, who was a proctologist. Proctologists work with your bum. And this is always the kill beat. So really what went on there was that a bankrupt idealist got together with a guy that works with rear ends, and they forged a fellowship that's been working with broken bums ever since. That's how I know God has a sense of humor. I don't even know where I was. It doesn't much matter, I suppose. But coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had two things I hated. I hated non-drinkers, and I hated Norwegians. My father-in-law was a Norwegian, and he used to say things to me. I didn't know what that meant, but I didn't like it. And I used to tell him to you. Yeah. So anyway, who does God choose out of a masses? A Norwegian with a brush cut, 250 pounds of somebody that is funny too. You know, he says to me, "I understand you drink even when you're not thirsty." Get a hold of my sister. So anyway, we go out on our first date, and I'm expecting to learn the secrets to alcoholism, and all this jerk wants to do is tell me about how drunk he used to get and the humiliating things that happened to him. See, that's how AA works. It doesn't work. I mean, it's a fellowship that says we have no dues or fees and then passes a hat. This is an organization that has twisted service. I mean, as soon as you understand what you're doing, at the end of 2 years, they rotate you out. You no longer can't be in power anymore. They say we're anonymous, and my name is Fred Smith. Very confusing when you first get in here. And they say, as soon as you have any power in AA, you have no power in AA. Good. Anyway, this guy completely confused me, so I told him a few horror stories myself, and he said, "Well, I don't know whether you're alcoholic or not, but it sounds like you'd be better if you didn't drink. I'll pick you up in the morning for a meeting," and said he'd be there at, like, 10 o'clock. And I left the house at 9. And he was out there waiting for me. Yeah. Yeah. He made a mistake on the time. But he said, "That's okay, because we can drink some more coffee." I thought Nabob owned Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, we go, "Do you remember your first meeting?" Like, I don't really remember it, but I remember the impression I had. It was 50-year-old men, all with these large bellies that they called serenity pouches. And each and every one of them had to drink as much coffee as possible, or the coffee sheriff would come in and have a few of them put in jail or something. Now, they're all talking at the same time about different things and going up and down some stairs or steps or something. I don't know what the hell they were. Anyway, one of them was stuck on stair 5. And this other one yells across the room, "You don't do that stair 5, you're going to get drunk." I said, "Where the hell is it? Where's the stair 5? Let's get to this stair 5. But I'm an alcoholic." Well, when he said, "How did you like the meeting?" I said, "I loved it. I am so glad you people have a place to go. And if I ever have any trouble with my drinking, you're who I'm going to phone. You know what I mean? And thanks for your time. You big Norwegian puke is what I was thinking. He dropped me off at the house, and, you know, here's how stupid these guys are. He's back at 8 o'clock to pick me up for another meeting. Now, I'm trying to remember, did I not tell him that I wasn't interested in Alcoholics Anonymous? Oh, well, we go to a meeting. And there they are, a bunch of these old guys with the bellies, except there's a couple of broads in there now, too. Hookers, I think to myself. I'll bet you, hookers. Who else would be at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting? So anyway, at the meeting, somebody said, you got any questions, ask anything you want. So I said, are you guys hookers? One of them said, no, we're not hookers, but we used to pick the odd, anemic little puke like you up in beer parlors. And, yeah, I know. And if they were really good boys, they got lucky. And I explained to him on the way home that I really didn't want to go to any more meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. So you can imagine how surprised I was when the next night he was there to pick me up for a meeting. And I said, I don't want to go to a meeting. He said, I don't care. And I said, but wait a minute. This is a free country, he said, for citizens, not alcoholics. He said, you are too sick to make a choice. I said, I'm not going. He said, get in the car. And I look at you new people and you're all shiny and nice and I know how you feel inside. He kidnapped me. And he phoned me one day and he said, do you feel like drinking? I said, yes. He said, I'll tell you what. When you're ready to drink, I'll buy you a beer. I said, I'm ready. He said, wait a minute. I'm going to buy you your first beer and then I'm going to beat you up. I'm going to break your arms and legs. And I said, why? He said, because I don't want you hurt by strangers. I have grown fond of you. And I want you to get the rewards of drinking right away. That's how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the old-timers used to say, if you drag the body to enough meetings, eventually the mind will follow. I can't overemphasize that. If you're new in this room tonight, we know you don't like us. We don't drink. Of course you don't like us. And we laugh at everything wrong. I know that. When they were talking about wetting the bed and they were all laughing, I thought, that's tragic. Then they say they got their wives and children back and the rest go, that should be happy. What the hell's wrong with you people? You're crazy. Uh-huh. Yeah, we're crazy. And they admit it. And I'm supposed to follow them. They said, if you want what we have, and I thought, yeah, right. Fat, old, you can't drink, I want what you have. What were the choices again? Insanity or death? I'll take death. Please. These are the steps we took. Good, take them, go! If you want what we have. No, I'll take leprosy. But, you know, God. You like that word, newcomers? Did you guys hear about the agnostic that married the atheist and they had the kid that was dyslexic that stayed up all night wondering if there really was a dog? Oh, come on. Let loose. We used to be afraid to laugh because you'd wet yourself right away, but we can do that now. Yeah! I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous against my will, listening to stories I don't care about by people I don't respect. And then we'd go for coffee after. And I'd tell them, I don't like you. And they'd say, you're right. And then Dwayne would look at me, just keep coming back, keep coming back. By the 90th day, I'm thinking to myself, the deal's over. Like, we had a 90-day deal. Have you heard this one? Don't drink for 90 days. If you don't like it, we'll give you all your misery back. And I thought, 90 days is up. It was gratitude day. And I thought, I'm going to get so drunk, and I'm going to slash your car tires, and I'm going to just beat the knock out of you. You don't know how bad I am when I'm drunk. And there is this big, fat Floridian named Wesley Parrish. I don't want to talk to you about God here, because Wesley had everything I wanted. I wasn't listening to him. I wasn't buying into it. I was sitting at the table like some of you are. And when Wesley stopped talking, everybody lined up to thank him, and he walked right by them, right up to me. He says, what's bugging you, asshole? And I said, this whole thing bugs me. I hate it. He said, get up in the parking lot. I thought, Dwayne sick this fat puke on me.
Now I got to tell him that I liked his little talk, and I'm so glad, and I'm so grateful. And we get out there, and God had told Wesley all my secrets. Now, I know none of you have any of these things, but I had secrets. And Wesley heads in right at the top of the list. Now, I think to myself, Dwayne has told him all this stuff. Because that first night, I let too much out of the bag. Then he tells him stuff that Dwayne doesn't know. Uh-oh, he's been talking to her. Then he hits into some stuff she doesn't know. I said, hallelujah, I'm saved. But I got to tell you something. This Wesley Parrish, he came in and out of my life. Now, God, when the pupil is ready, a teacher will appear. Don't ever fear for that. If you're 10 years sober and you're stuck, don't worry about that. Just ask God to send you somebody. He'll send you the most obnoxious little puke you ever saw in your life. Out of the clear blue. Hello. I don't want to know any more truth. Too bad. You know. Wesley. Well, I'll tell you how strange a happenstance can be. He saved my life because he convinced me that there was hope. He had everything I wanted. He was fat and rich. And I just loved the way he said he lived. Because you know what I had inside of me? Is that I knew, I've always known who I was. I always knew I was straight and tall. I always knew that. I always could never contact that thing inside of me that I wanted to touch so bad. You see, when you live like that, you're always a failure. It doesn't matter what everybody says. It didn't matter that I was successful in my business because I knew what I should be and I couldn't reach it. And so every day was a failure. And Wesley put me in touch with the center of me. And Wesley put me in touch with a God. And about 4 or 5 years ago, Wesley died. And I had spoken at a conference in Abilene, Texas on a Sunday morning. And I looked, they had the best speakers in the world conference coming up the next year, and Wesley was speaking in my spot Sunday morning. I thought, wonderful. And he died just shortly before the conference. And out of all the wonderful speakers in the world, they phoned me to replace Wesley. And I thought, Father, it's a full circle, isn't it? It's the worst talk of my entire life. I stood up, I said, my name's Marty. And I was stuck. I got a standing ovation. Closest I ever came to honesty. When I was 6 years sober, I had tried to do the steps to the best of my willing ability in the order I chose with the people who understood. I was at a convention one night, and there was a guy by the name of Tommy I delivering what must have been a marvelous talk because everybody in the hall was so impressed. I thought, yeah, I've heard lots of better speakers than him. How much of a table setting was it, really, and the dinner wasn't that hot. I mean, these things are going through my mind. God, that woman can wear makeup like that. Taking everybody's inventory. And when everybody sat down, I had a spiritual experience. Like the room just went on the bias. Just weird. It was like an LSD experience I'd had as a kid. And I thought, some jerk has drugged me. And I ran across the street to my hotel room where my wife was staying. She was in bed. She said, what's wrong? I said, shut up. That I shared with her. And then I... date her. And then there was this great light, and I was on top of a mountain, and there were all these people below me. Anyway, I go in the bathroom, I get down on my knees, and I got the big book out, and I flip to page 85, Mildred, and I look on there, and it says in there, your sobriety is contingent, it's a conditional deal, on the maintenance of your spiritual condition. And I went quiet.
That might not seem like much of a revelation to you, because I did not know, as many people do not know, how spirituality and Alcoholics Anonymous relate. Please forgive me if I swear here, but it's the only way I can describe it. This is the only organization in the world that uses the word God and shit in the same sentence and sounds spiritual. There's no other way to explain it. You have to talk to newcomers sometimes at the level of their understanding, in their mother tongue. Profanity. And, you see, I couldn't relate to that. I wanted to go from a drunk to a monk. I wanted to become so good that God would accept me. I ain't gonna get that good. And then I, through prayer, and because this Father, that's what I call my power, Father. I don't know any other way to describe Him. And I learned that from watching my little boy try to learn to ride a bike. I was looking out the window, and that kid must have gone off that bike 400 times, and I wanted to go out there and hold the seat, and I wanted to make it easier for him, and I wanted to gather his pain up, but I couldn't. He had to have his pain. He had to learn to balance. And that's where I got my concept of Father, and I'm going off my bike every day. I'm sure he's going, oi, oi, he's Jewish, oi, oi. Well, get up and ride. I'm in the big book one day, reading, and there it is. Bill Wilson is in the hospital. This is the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. His friend Ebby has emphasized to him, and I'm going to read right from the book, the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all of my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others, as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots which lay ahead. If he did not work, he would surely die. And then faith would be dead indeed, and with this alcoholic, it is just like that. So you see, spirituality for someone like me in Alcoholics Anonymous is not in sitting in front of a Bible saying, God, give me faith. Give me faith. God saying, Marty, give me a break. Get off your little butt and do something. See, this is a program of action. You get faith looking backwards. That's what I've learned from you. You tell me, I remember the day I phoned my sponsor up. I said, I am so depressed. He said, really? What's not going your way? I'll fire you. I hope God strikes you drunk. He said, you want to get out of your depression, Marty? Do something. Do anything. You know, if you're doing for somebody else, you can't think about yourself. And he said, let me tell you something else. Don't ever let me hear you ask for justice again. I'm afraid you're going to get it. People like us, he said, are into mercy. We don't ask for justice. And so it's in service, fitting myself to be of maximum use to God and to my fellow, that I gain spirituality. It's an action dimension. I do something, I feel better. I know if I do that again, I'll feel better. I mean, I learned that drinking. The only problem is my drinker broke. If I could still drink, do you think I'd be here with you guys? I'd be out in the street throwing up just like old times. This doesn't break. It gets better and better and better. Every day is a crucifixion of self. The less I am Marty, the more that I try and put myself into the mold that God would have me be. That is the direct extent to which I have serenity. You see, this is a program of attraction, not osmosis. I sat around in your meetings. I listened to you guys. I admired you guys. I wanted to be like you when I grew up. I wasn't going to do what you're doing to get there. Are you kidding? Step four, I get depressed. I told my sponsor, if I ever did step four, I'd probably commit suicide. He said, hurry up. We haven't lost one yet. Do step five. I went to step five. I sat with another human being and I told him the exact nature of his wrongs. I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous at 6 years sober. I wasn't drunk. But I'll tell you what I'd become. It's full of secrets, different and apart from, stuck on the wall, looking at those jerk newcomers, So slimy old guys, sure it's easy for them, they're so old that they drink, they would leak it out anyway, so what do they care? I've got pressure. I need to drink. And I have the big secret, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work, and it doesn't work if you don't work at it. I came into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I avoided meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because so-and-so was chairing, or this was wrong, or that was wrong, and I found out something from my old friend Franklin Williams. He said, Marty, if you aren't happy with your group, don't leave it and go screw somebody else's up. And I heard God right behind him say, yes, and that goes for your marriage too, dummy. I, one day at a time today, and I want to talk a little bit about today, because we spent a lot of time in Alcoholics Anonymous talking about the first 10 steps. And I'm just going to sum up those steps by telling you that my experience with step 10 culminated in a very revealing experience with that crazy Norwegian loony that's in and out of my life even today. And he said to me one time, how do you do step 10? And I said, well, I go to bed, and I asked God to show me where I've been wrong in the day, and then I apologized. And he said, uh-huh, just exactly what I thought a jerk like you would do. A little self-pity before you go to sleep, eh, Mark? A little wall around the old crap before we shut the old eyes. Anybody? And I said, that is what the book says. He said, it isn't. It tells us to look for lying, self-pity, self-seeking. And why don't you, from now on, ask God to show you a couple of things you've done right? And he said, let me tell you a principle out of physics. This is pretty big stuff for a Norwegian. He was really wound this particular night. He said, it is a physical law that two things cannot occupy the same place at the same time. So if you're lonely, don't stay home alone. Go be with someone. If you're telling lies, focus on telling the truth. Not on the fact that you're a liar, but on telling the truth. If you're focusing on that, the lying will go away. And he said, at night, thank God for all of the miracles that are happening to you, and ask him to point out in the day where you could have told a lie and you didn't. That has been a very healing experience for me. And I share that with you, and I want to underline this. In my book, it says, specifically in the 12 and 12, that step 4 is the beginning of a lifelong process. It says in the big book that a business that does not take a regular inventory usually goes broke. Therefore, there are times where I am, right now I am in a step 4. I cannot believe the new kinds of resentments I can get now that I'm well. You don't have to be sick to get better. I have resentments that appeared to be justified, and I'm reminded of the words of Bill Wilson again. He said, if this thing comes apart, it will be from self-righteous indignation. And that is where I come to in alcoholics. And I write these names down. I am mad at the cause, how it affects me. And then I trace it to the nature of the wrong, and I go and talk to somebody, and it's just like dumping the trash. And I know some of you have only done one step 4, and I know that that seems like it's been enough for you, and maybe it is. For me, it's not. So I'm not arguing with you. If that's how you're doing your program, no problem. But that's not what my experience has been. I'm a person that accumulates anger. I start to think that I want the world to treat me in a certain way, and you know what, it won't. The world just goes on within me and without me, and how I react to it is what you guys are teaching me. I've got a big sign in my office. I got to tell you guys, this is stupid. I'm building a $40 billion corporation. I mean, I was wet in my pants 14 years ago, but these idiots have got me building this corporation. It's amazing what will happen to you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I live on a ranch. I've got a little girl at English horse rides. I got this wife. I got bankers. I was telling Mildred early, one guy told me the other day I was overdrawn. I told him, tell somebody that cares. I can't believe you idiot gave me an account. What do you mean I'm overdrawn? Of course I'm overdrawn. What do you mean $197,000? I have friendships today. You know, the 12 by 12, an authorized piece of literature for us to read, says my basic problem is my inability to form a partnership with another human being. You know what that means? I can't let you be you. And every day I come to these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I walk by the old boys and they say, oh, there he goes. There, but for the grace of God, goes God. I might get to thinking I'm pretty slick. Some guy that's just gone out of the ditch will tell you, you ain't so smart. If you're so smart, why are you talking so stupid? You know, why don't you keep it simple? I like that part, too. It's simple but not easy. And it truly is. All I have to do is change everything about me. Stop thinking like I think. And just do everything for everybody else. You'll be so happy. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's just a little tough some days to do that. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship, which means that you guys allow me to be me. But that is just amazing, that I have some place where I can lay down my pack and just be what I am. I don't know how you express that except to say that if you've been as lonely as I've been in a crowd, to sit in this vast group of faces, and I know some of you don't agree with what I'm saying, you know, one or two, thousand, doesn't matter, I'm not up here to be right, I'm just here to tell you like it is for me. And here's what I've learned: I must trust God. God talks to me through the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can absolutely rely on it. This is how I run my family today. Second tradition. For our group purpose, my family, we have but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he might express himself in our group conscience. This is great because when you screw up, you can just tell him, hey, we made the decision together. I must trust God. Good orderly direction in my life given to me by the people that saved my life. I must clean house. That means step 10, step 4. That means throwing out the trash that's complicating my life. I got out of an airplane in Dallas, Texas recently. A man got in the car. Or I got into the man's car. He got in the car. He didn't even close the door. He said to me, why is life so complicated? And I said, you know what? Life isn't complicated if you stay on the road. It's idiots like him and me that want to run around in the ditches and see what's under the weeds that get in trouble. If I just stay on the path, life is not complicated. And I must help others. You know, I used to think that I could not carry the message because I was not a successful 12-stepper. Stan C. said to me one time, explain for me what an really successful 12-stepper is. I said, well, somebody who's got all kinds of people that they brought in and they're sober. He said, no. Bill Wilson carried that message 600 times before he found Bob. And Elanon spoke, Lois spoke these words. She said, what do you mean you're not a success? You're still sober, aren't you? Carrying the message to the alcoholic that still suffers is something to do with him. I'm just to carry the message, but it's a whole lot to do with me. My father says, forgive them, and I will forgive you. Help them, I will help you. I write my own death warrant. I write my own forgiveness. If you're watching some of these sunshine pukes and Alcoholics Anonymous walk around, they seem so happy, everything just goes their way, check them out. You'll find out that they're servants. You cannot outgive God. Bottom line. And if you try and get this thing and hold it into yourself, it'll backfire on you. This I know. I've done it. Surrender yourself to God absolutely. Join us on this twisted highway. This big sign I've got in my office says, don't take yourself so damn seriously. Life is a joke. You either get it or you don't. I want to wrap up with this little reading out of the book. I do this in self-defense because I know there's a lot of serious people out there that get really annoyed. I've had guys come up to me and say, when are you going to get serious? Like, this is a life and death issue. I tell them, that's right. But I feel the power of God go through a room when there's laughter. He heals. Did you ever go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? I don't care what meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you didn't come out feeling better. Yeah, everybody there was a jerk, but you feel better. You get into a big room like this and you almost get spiritual. You want to go, you couldn't even pick a record up, the hole would heal, you know? Like, did you ever know that when you laugh, it releases endorphins in your brain, the same thing that's released during sex, and why not? You see, what does the book say? It says, when sex is bothering us, throw yourself all the harder into helping others. Notice it said helping others. Not even newcomers, some of you guys, you know. Helping others. Why? Because my sex problems are more to do with my self-esteem than they are to do with sex. It's because I want to feel like I matter. Nothing makes me feel like I matter more than watching somebody laugh, watching somebody recover, watching the love in your faces as you all sit there and pray for me that someday I will get serious. So I'll leave you with this. From the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. An alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my home. He could not or would not see our way of life. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity, but just underneath there is deadly earnest. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here, right now. Each day, my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to man. My cup is full. I hope I shared at least something that you can get mad at. Like they say in New York, if I've upset you in any way, shape, or form, take it home and use it. You probably need it. God bless you.